sort of jazzy type stuff in the background there. All right. So the things that made this into a movement were really strange, because the restoration movement was a very unified movement at first. All right? It became very divisive eventually, but at first. And the primary forces that created this unity were not structure. We're talking about structure right now, right? Mm. And it was not structure. What's maintained unity for us is relationship. For them, it wasn't relationship. It was the colleges, all right, and the periodicals. All right? They were forces for both unity and division. You know that unity letter that we had? Yeah. That letter created both unity and division. It created both. All right? There were some problems kind of inherent in what was going on here. All right? There were some centrifugal forces in this movement. And one question is, although we are committed to not having a hierarchy, we're not going to have a creed or a overarching structure. In order to evangelize, we have to work together. They figured that one out, because this group was not evangelizing outside of the English speaking world. Said, you know what? That's a scandal. So they decided to form what became known as the Missionary Society. And this was the issue. This was the issue of the 19th century. It was the Missionary Society. You know, my friend Mark Wilkinson, he was at Sunset School of Preaching a few years ago, and he took his class, and the class was Modern Church Issues. You know what the major topic of that class was? Musical instruments. Somebody needs to change that name of that course to Outdated, Unimportant Church Issues. All right, but this issue of the day was the Missionary Society. All right, and the question is, could they form para-church organizations? The Church of Christ will divide over anything. Could you even have an orphanage? Could the church even have an orphanage? Because in order to have an orphanage, you had to have more than one church supporting it. Well, is that allowed? Oh, that is the Church of Christ question, if there ever was one. All right, and another thing was the Civil War. Alexander Campbell died right before the Civil War, right at the dawn of the, right, I think maybe even 1861. It's really close. And the bottom line is, here's what's happened. The Northern disciples opposed slavery generally, and the Southern disciples supported slavery generally. Every denomination in America divided into Northern and Southern versions of itself during the Civil War. The only exception is the whatever you want to call it, the movement. All right, they refused, and they did not divide at that time. And yet, division was planted, even though, and this is to the credit of the Restoration Movement, as far as I know, and I've heard this, but I've heard it biasing, so there might be exceptions, so take it with a grain of salt. But as far as I know, the Methodists had a Southern and a Northern convention, and the Baptists did, and the Lutherans did. Everybody did. The only exception was what is now Church of Christ / Christian Church Disciples of Christ. They did not divide. Of course, since their unity wasn't based on a structure, arguably what was there to divide? You know, there was no structure to cut in half. All right? But this argument over the over missionary society started before the Civil War, and it raged after the Civil War. And people like Benjamin Franklin said, that's an organization. The church cannot have an organization. And so the bottom line is, those who sought unity and those who sought to restore the biblical purity eventually formed into two separate parties. When did this happen? Well, 1906, it was official. I would say by the 1880s, for all practical purposes, there were two separate groups by the 1880s. The instrument, oh no, Command, example, necessary demonstration. Is there a command to use instruments? Is there an example of use? In the New Testament. Yeah, all right. I'm taking that stand. I remember we had this debate. Whose fool are you? Richard Rogers. I think he kind of did a whole thing on that. Yeah, okay. Anyway, is there an example of it in the New Testament? No. Can you demonstrate its need? So you can't do it. Of course, what happened was all of our churches were non-instrumental. All of them were. By the way, Zwingliites were all non-instrumental. All right? Calvin, non-instrumental. Zwingli was non-instrumental for the same reason that the Church of Christ is non-instrumental. For the identical reason. They took the organs out. Not the Lutherans. The Lutherans had organs. But the Zwingliites, the Reformed, didn't. So this is an old debate. To us, it's like, what kind of stupid debate is that? I agree with you, but I'm telling you, this is big. So Moses Lard said, no preacher should enter a church where there's an organ. In other words, whether they're using it or not, even if there's a church in the building, don't even walk in. Oh, my God. How legalistic. How fast we move from a unity movement to a division movement. And I'll tell you, Moses Lard was not going to be in the Christian church. He was going to be, although it didn't exist yet. So what merged in the early 1830s diverged by the 1880s and 90s. All right? So the immediate cause is kind of like, what separated the Orthodox Church from the Roman Church? Was it actually filioque? No. That was just the excuse. What happened was you had a massive difference in philosophy and thinking about how to do church, which is just a matter of time. So the excuse is created. The excuse was the musical instrument. That was the excuse. And to a lesser but very significant extent, the missionary society. Okay? Got it? So I want to talk about Daniel Sommer versus David Lipscomb. All right?
The beards.
The beards. Yes. All right, so I'm going to go to page 573. Where did I put my... Here we go. All right, Daniel Sommer is the goat. And David Lipscomb is the hero. Now, David Lipscomb did more to create what became the Church of Christ than anybody else. And yet, he had a spirit of wanting to have unity. He was just between a rock and a hard place. Because things were going to fall apart, so he had a choice. He could either go with one or the other, or he could go with none of them. And he was forced to join. What the irony is, he joined the divisive people. He was a uniter. David Lipscomb is a hero. He is a hero of Christianity to me. And yet, he joined the people whose philosophy was the opposite of his because he agreed with them on their doctrine. He totally opposed their spirit, but he agreed with them on doctrine. And being a Church of Christ, of course, he went with doctrine. Of course, what else is new? You know, if that doesn't define us, our background. By the way, I say us because I believe we should acknowledge our past and not sort of say that was them. That was us. That's what Daniel did. He did not say, those people did that. He said, we did that. Nehemiah didn't not say those people did that. He said, we did that. Own. All right. Let me see. All right, so the story circulates in Texas, which cannot be documented, that there's a man in Dallas who made a hobby of collecting cornerstones engraved Church of Christ, A.D. 33. One of those spokesmen of his people, Leroy Brownlow, put it simply, I am a member of the Church of Christ because Christ is the founder of the one and only church. Wow. David Harrell leaves no doubt as to how he views the Church Universal. The group to which I belong is the Church Universal. That's Daniel Sommer. All right. This is a quote from Daniel Sommer. Some time ago I was asked, what denomination are you a member of? I answered, I am not a member of any denomination. Then I was asked, well, Do you just take up with all of them? I affirm then, as I do now, I'm not a member of any of them. I'm a member of the Church of Christ, the church we read about in God's Word. And I do not apologize for that statement. Okay, well, there you go. That's one way to go about it. Okay. So basically what happened was this guy, Daniel Sommer, he said, you know what? My job is to divide the church. We're going to find out who the true Christians are. You know what? You're either with me or against me. And if you're not going to be with me, then your discipleship is highly to be doubted. You need to leave those churches. Basically, I am going to be the man who's going to form the real Church of Christ. Who's that sound like? Him who is not to be named. He made himself the watch. Yeah. He made himself the watchdog for the brotherhood. Daniel Sommer was a militant who left a legacy of legalistic wrangling and divided congregations. You know what disfellowshipped Daniel Sommer? His son disfellowshipped him. His wife disfellowshipped him. He finally repented at the age of something like 80. He realized, I've been a terrible Christian. I've been divisive. And he tried to kind of back off on all this terrible stuff he did. It was too late. Those guys weren't going to accept him. He more than any other single person, made us a totally biblicist, sectarian, obnoxious, judgmental church. But then again, you know what happens? It's like when you do one of these things, you lose something. When we did this with the churches of Christ, what did we lose? All the wisdom, all the Bible knowledge. Oh, my goodness, that's a problem there. And the Church of Christ has no sense of history. We say Church of Christ, we. I'm saying we because, you know, honestly, that's we. By the way, back in 2003, I told Roger Lamb, we're just Church of Christ. Let's drop the name ICOC. Well, I lost that debate. Of course, nobody listened to me at that time. Why can't we just be Church of Christ? Why do we have to have a different name? Other people said, yes! You know, if it had been me, we would just keep the name Church of Christ. I like the name Church of Christ. All right. All right. Here we go. Daniel Sommer was a militant. He said, following his lengthy sermon during which he blasted the liberals for their many sins, a prepared document was read to the assembled crowd by the elder Peter Warren. This powerful document, whose chief author was Sommer himself, is known as the Address and Declaration because Thomas Campbell wrote the Declaration and Address. So he wrote the Address and Declaration.
Show him.
Yeah. All right. To play on words about Thomas Campbell's book. Says it's called the Sand Creek Manifesto. All right? It was a call for division. Larry Miles, in his study of Sommer's life, noted that this day will go down in our history as a day when the lines of demarcation were drawn. Dr. Leroy Garrett seems to agree. The date was Sunday, August 18th, 1889, and while it is risky to attempt to pinpoint the origin of any church, this would be the date for the beginning of the Church of Christ. So the Church of Christ didn't start with Alexander Campbell in 1812. No. It started in 1889. All right. Sommer was determined to lead the faithful away from the larger body of disciples of Christ. He came to refer to those loyal to his own plea as the Church of Christ. So that's when they started being called the Church of Christ, 1880s. Whereas all others were the so-called Christian. He called the so-called Christian Church. He was condemned for this in the Christian Standard. That's good. Daniel Sommer is trying to get control of some of our congregations to form a distinct religious body. He would thus start a new sect. Its bond and unity would be its opposition to certain methods of Christian work done by us. The Sommer's followers came to be referred to as anti-brethren, since they were opposed to so many things. Don't ever be known by the things you're against rather than the things you're for. That's such a sad thing. He said, we are the only Church of Christ in town. The matter effectively was brought to a head by one statement in particular on this occasion. Sommer declared, In closing up this address and declaration, we state that we are impelled by a sense of duty to say that all such innovations and corruptions to which you refer, musical instruments, things like that, you know, Sunday school, kitchens in the church, having more than one cup, having, you know, we're one cup people, all right? That after being admonished and having had sufficient time of reflection, if they do not turn away from such abominations, that we cannot and will not regard them as brethren. The words have been uttered. For the first time in history, a substantial segment of the Stonecamp movement made a test of fellowship and a bond of union over issues that had generally been considered matters of opinion. Daniel Sommer is devoted to division, and wrote in his review, the Sand Creek Declaration is being adopted, and those who will not do right are purged out as old leaven. That essentially, that's what Kip McKean did in about 1983-84. You need to leave the Church of Christ. If you're sold out to Sepple, you just need to leave. And, you know, people do change, but he hasn't changed very much. He said, hallelujah! All right? For this, praise God for the division of his people. All right? David Lipscomb represents the diametric opposite of that. And it's funny that he is he's known as the father of the Church of Christ, because he basically, this thing was blowing up. What you had is the rich churches were becoming disciples and the poor churches were becoming Church of Christ. So, you know, you got the classic, the wrong side of the tracks. So you have is you'd have a disciple church in the center of town and then a Church of Christ off there on the other side of the track. The poor people, the uneducated people, all right, they became the Church of Christ. All right, and generally it was Church of Christ, Texas, Arkansas, Tennessee, Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, which were still unified. They divided much later. That was Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, New York. It was a northern-southern thing. Not completely. There were Churches of Christ in the north. There were Christian churches in the south. The division was over whether we're going to have musical instruments in the church, whether we're going to have parachurch organizations. But basically, are we going to be a church of unity or division? Are we going to be a legalistic church where every single question is a question of salvation? It's a question of fellowship. Are we going to say, folks, let's chill out a little bit? So we became this legalistic organization of which it's fairly embarrassing. And by the way, the split was about 80-20. Christian church, 80. Church of Christ, 20. At the turn of the century, the Christian church was much larger. But then eventually the Church of Christ blew it out. So by the 1940s and 50s, the Church of Christ way surpassed the Christian church, because the Church of Christ was more zealous, way more zealous, because they were the ones on the wrong side of the track. The Christian church, they kind of is a comfortable Christianity. They're not really picking any fights. You know, and so because they weren't picking fights, they also weren't really baptizing that many people. All right. So that's kind of what went on there. Oh, there were many other controversies. Now we're Church of Christ. By the way, in my opinion, our philosophy and way of doing church is more like the Christian church today than the Church of Christ anyway. Now, historically, we do not come from the Christian church. We come from the Church of Christ. That's a fact. But I would say we would blend in many ways more easily, more readily with Christian church people than the Church of Christ people today. Because our way of thinking about how to do Christianity is more in line with that. But, you know, I don't know if Greg agrees with that. But all right, so one cup, we have these anti-churches. Gordon Ferguson was a total anti-church guy. And they're against this, they're against that, they're against everything. And basically, their Christianity was defined by all the things they're against. How sad. And these church publications were making it worse and worse and worse. I mean, the way to become a hero in the Church of Christ was to call those people out. So a premillennialism, that was a huge thing. Another thing was on pacifism. The Churches of Christ were very pacifist. And during World War I, hundreds of Church of Christ preachers went to jail, because they preached pacifism. Said, we cannot be in the army. hundreds that went to jail. All right? And yet, the Church of Christ completely changed. In the 30s, the Church of Christ made a massive political shift to the right. We were really liberal politically. But we generally refused to even be involved in politics, although probably Abraham Lincoln was a restoration guy, and which was the one who definitely was in our movement?
Franklin.
One of those obscure presidents that never really did too much. So one guy was definitely a restoration guy, and it's quite likely that Lincoln was baptized. What? I don't know which one. I'm not going to be able to remember. So there's division over Sunday school. Can you have a kitchen in the church? All this kind of stuff. All right. That's practically enough on that. All right. So bottom line is, as of 1906, the U.S. Census Department, because they designated what church you're in, believe it or not. So according to the U.S. Census Department, there's the Christian Church and the Church of Christ, 1906. That's when the official division was, recognized by the government. But by around 1890 or so, it existed. So you got two wings, sort of the unity wing and the divisive Pharisee wing. And we are from the divisive Pharisee wing. Yes?
Before 1906, what were they called as?
They were called, I believe, disciples or Christian church. They were not called the Church of Christ. I'd say that's for sure. So they kind of went out of the way to not have a name. They didn't want to have a name. The last thing they wanted to have was a name. All right. And so I'm not a sufficient expert. I can say what was the chief name being used. I believe it was not principally Church of Christ. I believe that was one of the things being used, because we are both, right? We use Christian Church of Christ even now in our movement, right? Yes. And then we have some people that have some of these interesting names, which that's okay too. I'm not going to make an issue out of that. That's not important.
Lighthouse
All right.
Church.
Yeah, Lighthouse Church. What's that mean? I don't know. It's just a nice name. As long as it gets people. Is it really?
Yeah.
It is?
My region, my parade is Black Way LA.
Okay. Well, whatever. All right. So, we're in the 20th century, premillennialism. The church divided over premillennialism. All right? And the Church of Christ decisively turned against premillennialism, but there's still hundreds of churches out there, and they're still the premillennial Church of Christ. And there's still pacifist Church of Christ. I mean, the Church of Christ will divide over anything. By the way, it is improving. In the last 20 years, the Church of Christ has, maybe Greg could tell you better than I could, but I would say the Church of Christ has moved very refreshingly and very significantly away from this ridiculously divisive spirit. So, but there's a lot of old guard people that aren't going to ever do that. They're just going to have to die. That's the only way it's going to work. Okay,
David
great.
Garfield was a restorationist. And it says here, and I'm shocked at this.
Garfield, okay, yeah.
Lyndon Johnson, but he was Disciples of Christ.
Oh, Lyndon Johnson. I didn't know that.
And so was Reagan, Disciples of Christ.
Yeah. Oh. Wow. Pat Boone.
Yep.
All right.
Larry Craig, still close friends with Pat Boone.
He is. Good for him. Pat Boone's got to be on the old side.
His wife's.
Yeah. Pat Boone, Church of Christ. Pat Boone, these guys don't know who Pat Boone is, but.
Yeah.
You've heard the name, yeah. Let's not talk about him, but anyway.
Lives in Beverly Hills.
So eventually what happened was. So we got the legalistic. Bible, every issue is an essential issue, all right? But we're also the fired up, committed ones, really, and we're actually starting to grow. And then you've got the Christian church, but the Christian church had a division as well. The bottom line is, part of the Christian church went, like, total liberal, like, unrecognizable, generally. That became the Disciples of Christ. And basically, the Disciples of Christ was the chief motivator for the ecumenical movement. The ecumenical movement started in the 50s, and the group in America most strongly behind the ecumenical movement, believe it or not, was Disciples of Christ. I had a colleague at Grossmont College, and he's there, because he knew I was a Church of Christ guy. He's, yeah, kind of, we're kind of the same. I'm like, okay, dude who says F this and all that kind of stuff and goes out and gets drunk. But, you know, we got the same history there. You know, I really struggled giving him the right hand of fellowship. But, you know, he's an interesting guy, colorful guy. All right, so the bottom line is the disciples. So how about this? Church of Christ, conservative. Christian church, moderate. Disciples of Christ, liberal. All right, that's pretty good. And but there are disciple of Christ churches that really do still teach biblically and will actually say you have to be baptized to be saved. And I believe there are definitely many saved people within Disciples of Christ. The percentage might be on the low side, perhaps. I don't know. It's not my job to judge. Great. So I'm almost done. Oh, by the way, it was 1950-something, 1950. You have two separate. So now you got, so 1906 you have two, 1950 you have three. It's like the Trinity, right? We got the liberal, conservative, and moderate. You know, Father, Son, Spirit. Ha ha ha! Very funny. All right, lessons to be learned before we have lunch, and then Greg's gonna.
Can you comment on the North American?
All right, so yeah. Well, of course, the Church guys wouldn't have something like this. So this is sort of like the acting body of the Christian church. So the Christian church has national conventions, kind of like we do, right? They have national conventions, and you know, so they all get together and they decide where the church is going to go. The Christian church, the Church of Christ would, you know, the hardcore Christian Church of Christ people would say these people are just a denomination. Now, what do they mean by that? What they mean is they have this hierarchical organization. They have ordination and this kind of stuff. All right. But anyway, so these guys have their meetings. And so basically UCMS and NACC, I believe this became the Christian church. This became the disciples. It's one or the other. It's not my thing. I don't really care about this stuff very much. But bottom line is, so they had this huge convention every year, every year, every year. And then next thing you know, we got two conventions. All right? And so I sort of dismissively said the Bethany College, which is the one founded by Alexander Campbell, it's owned by the Disciples of Christ. Oh, it's so liberal. I'm being a little divisive myself in that comment. But it's very liberal. It's very, very liberal.
What's the name of the Church of Christ conference that happened?
No, we don't have those. We have lectureships. No. See, we don't have those kinds of things. We're against those kind of things. You shouldn't have that kind of thing. Like I said, we are more like the Christian church in the way we do church than we are like the Church of Christ.
But they did have campus ministry stuff at one time, right?
Well, they had lectureships. They had chairs, campus chairs. Yes.
Oh, I'll give you all
that. Cool. Yeah. Yes, please. In fact, it's from that kind of organization that we came, so I better not talk about that. All right, so a few lessons. Unity is hard to maintain without strong hierarchical structure. So we decided just a couple months ago, are we going to go for a strong hierarchical structure? We said, no. I fully support that decision. I'm glad we didn't do that. But that's going to make unity more difficult, not easier. But the question is, what kind of unity do you want? Do you want an imposed unity or unity based on relationships? Well, which is easier to maintain?
Imposed.
Imposed is easier to maintain, obviously. But does it agree with the spirit of Christianity? Well, I'm not gonna say those guys don't agree with the spirit of Christianity. I'll just say I personally agree with the decision that was made. I wasn't asked my vote, but if I had, I would have voted that way. All right, but if we're not going to have a strong hierarchical structure, we're going to have to think very, very long and hard. And it's not Greg and I, it's you guys. You guys are going to be the ones to make this happen. We're leaving the stage here. You guys are the ones that are going to have to make this unity happen. Separating essential matters from non-essentials is harder than you think. Now, for the Church of Christ, they're just terrible at that. But we're not good at it.
Yeah.
We think we're good at it, but we're not good at it because that is our DNA. A movement with out a strong hierarchical structure needs instruments to maintain unity. I made this slide when the disciples today didn't even exist or barely existed, when we had nothing. I wrote this slide like in 2006, I think, when we didn't. And I said, what we need is we need parachurch organizations, and now we have them. I'm glad we have those things. Like mission societies. We didn't have mission societies. We have them now. I'm glad we have those. I personally believe that parachurch organizations are good, but strong hierarchical top-down structure bad. That's where I'm coming from. That's just where I'm coming from.
You say it's good or bad?
I'm saying parachurch organizations are necessary to complete the mission.
Yeah.
And to maintain unity. But a strong hierarchical authoritative organization, I'm against that personally. I'm pretty sure you and I are totally on the same page. I'm pretty sure we have that. You could not put a knife between us on this stuff. I'm pretty sure. Careful thinking about theology, church structure, and history are required for long-term growth and unity. Not for short-term, but for long-term. We have to think about these things. But how can we think about these things? Because who is we? It's a good question. We is a bunch of individuals trying to do this together. We're trying to be a family, but it's a bizarre family, a family that almost meet none of the other ones in the family. It's difficult to avoid overacting to groups to whom we disagree. All right. Book recommendations. All right. The three-volume set, if you're really into this, you got to read it. You got to read this book. But most of you are not going to read this book. Greg probably did. Greg reads everything. All right, yeah, that's a good one. And then since I made this slide, Tom Jones made a nice one. And right? Yeah. All right, but that's just about us, though. You got to understand. So this is Greg's favorite. To me, it's 50-50. They're equal. This is the one that we've suggested.
Well, just because I had him as a professor, but well, Garrett is he's a Christian church guy, and he's a lot more in-depth.
Yeah. But, you know, I totally understand why you like Hughes better. All right. Oh, I better turn that off. Oop. That's my version of what Greg's going to do. I don't know how close to 12 we got, but we're going to stop right now anyway. All right. So we'll start about maybe, say, 10 after 1. Is that good? And I'm almost sure we're going to finish by 4:30 today. I'm almost sure.
Yeah. And guys, I would probably take my I'd leave my cords, but I'd take my computer because other people are coming in and out here today.
Okay.
Just for your I might be a little excessive, but that's what I'm doing. Better always safe than sorry.
Great. I'd rather be sorry than safe. I don't lock my car. I don't lock my house. In my office for the last 18 years, I left the door open, my computer and my cell phone sitting there. I'm kind of weird that way. Okay. So if they want my computer, they can have it. That's my attitude.
Well,
but that's a foolish attitude, I admit. But it's just,
no,
it's just my attitude.
Psychologically, it says...
It's very freeing.
It says that... if you live more fear-based, then you attract bad things. And if you live faith-based, you attract good things.
That's why I do that.
So. But I've been robbed, so.
I'll unlock the doors, and Jan will come right behind me and lock them.
Really? No, David, that is crazy.
In fact, when we were living in San Diego, Jan and I, we didn't even know where the key was. We didn't. He never. I mean, when we're going to move, when somebody stay at our house when we're not there, we have to find a key. I don't know. Do you know where the key is?
All right.
None of us had a key.
The unity of the church depends on where we have.
Does anybody want to go get us keys?
Anybody got time to make copies?
Of what? Oh.
Cool, have it.
Have it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't get a whole lot of reception on that one.
Nope. Let's go.
All right. Oops. Rats. Well, that was a short one. 34 minutes.